Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This program is recorded.
Welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. Today is Tuesday, December 8th, 2015. This is Joe Cavelli with the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. We are coming to you live today, but each show is recorded, so if you'd like to listen to any past shows in the archive, they are located at the PAW website, which is paaw.us. I'd like to welcome to the broadcast my co-hosts, Patrick Ryan and Dan Williams. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Joe.
Hey, terrific to have you with us again. This will conclude our last show of the year for 2015, and we've got a whopper, let's just say it that way. We have several guests on with us today, and for the most part, the program is going to be dedicated to community paramedicine and mobile integrated health care. It's kind of been the buzzword in Wisconsin the last several months. Patrick, would you mind sharing an update? I know you moderate the conference call that happens frequently with the EMS and hospital and healthcare community regarding the whole community paramedicine initiative, most specifically with the legislative work. Would you mind offering an update?
Sure. Thanks, Joe. Understandably so, the holidays slow everything down around this time of year. We had some follow-up meetings that I was not present for with the Hospital Association and then also a couple of the lead legislators that we've talked to and had good support from in the past. Where we kind of stand now is the Representative Loudenbeck would kind of like us, along with other stakeholders, primarily thinking of WHA, and then, of course, PAW, PFFW, and the Chiefs, to kind of come together to kind of hammer out some minor details as we kind of pull everything together to really have the last draft to be introduced. One of the things that we're getting some feedback on is the educational component that we've included, which is the curriculum that was based on the North Central EMS Institute's curriculum that has then been adopted by both Hennepin and UW-Milwaukee, which really has been, the foundation of what we've all been talking about all along and what we hope to have to see eventually come into play. So just to talk about that, kind of get everybody on the same page, so that we're not having any dissension, I guess, as we go forward with the actual piece of legislation. So that's not going to happen until after the first of the year, but we're hopeful that can come together fairly quickly there with a meeting. I think, again, the legislators just want everybody to be together so that we can have more certainty as we go forward. The other thing that we're up against is a relatively short session here. They're going to meet in January, February, and I think just the early part of March as it stands now. So time is short, so I think being efficient and getting everybody together to start, I think, should help us in the long run. But won't have any real information to share until after the first of the year.
Very good. Thank you, Patrick. Appreciate the update, and a lot of effort's been placed into this. Everything's at a staging point at this point. It's just a matter of time, and getting into 2016, it will be a big year for this effort. Thank you very much for your leadership and to those that are also a part of that effort. Dan, good morning. Welcome to the broadcast again.
Well, good morning, Joe. How you doing?
Hey, we're doing pretty good. I bet people are feeling pretty good yet over in Green Bay, given the dramatic win the other night. I know you're over in Door County, so you're probably getting a feel for that yet, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah, we get everything that Green Bay gets, it seems like. And, I think they're still showing highlights on the local TV programs over here.
Well, as you know, I'm in River Falls, Wisconsin, which borders Minnesota and Wisconsin. And let's just say the Vikings are also playing that highlight and sensing it in a much different way. So it's been interesting, to say the least. But we have a great broadcast lined up today, and let me give you a highlight here of where we're at. Today's program is sponsored by Stark Collection Agency, Boundary Medical, Transworld Systems, and EMS Medical Billing. We'd like to thank them for their support. Today's program will last 60 minutes. Beginning in just about 2 minutes, we're going to bring in several individuals. As we mentioned at the top of the hour, our broadcast is pretty much dedicated to community paramedicine. they've done a terrific job in Milwaukee County, instituting a lot of programs there in the past year or year and a half, to include community paramedicine and mobile integrated health care. Then about 9:45, we'll be talking with Fred Hornby. Fred is the director for the Working Together Conference that's sponsored by the Wisconsin EMS Association. That conference, as many of you know, is coming up in January. If you've been wanting to learn more about community paramedicine or mobile integrated health care and starting to implement these concepts in your 2016 to-do list, then this webcast really is for you. Several fire departments in Milwaukee County, along with Aurora Healthcare System and other public agencies, have teamed up to work this new and emerging area of healthcare delivery to develop some really interesting programs. And there is great success with these programs. They've been highlighted in other means as well as in the media, and we'd like to offer a spotlight to the great effort that's taking place in Milwaukee. This program obviously is being recorded, so if you'd like to share it when the broadcast is done with someone else, feel free to do so from the PAW website. In just a few minutes, we'll be bringing in to our broadcast our guests this morning, Dan Teich with North Shore Fire, Dan Weber with Greenfield Fire, David Bandemir with West Dallas Fire, Michael Wright with Milwaukee Fire, Patty Pagel with Aurora Healthcare, and Tim Kirsten with West Allis Fire. You are listening to the EMS Live in Wisconsin broadcast. Our program will continue after this brief message. The fine art of successful ambulance billing and collections begins with the Stark Agency, located in Madison. The Stark Agency provides full-service debt collection, specializing in EMS and ambulance patient billing. They're also experts in the Wisconsin Offset Trip Program, a new option for ambulance services. For more information, call 877-274-7764. That number again, 877-274-7764. The Stark Agency is accredited by the Better Business Bureau and a member of the Wisconsin Collectors Association. Boundtree Medical helps America's EMS and fire departments save lives by providing a full array of medical equipment and supplies. You can, of course, get national brands from Boundtree, but did you know that Boundtree's private label products can save you up to 20% off the price of name brand? Another way to save is when you need to update your AEDs, defibrillators, monitors, and pumps. Boundtree's recertified equipment offering provides you solutions at a fraction of the new price. You can also save with Boundtree's smart kitting solutions. Order custom pre-assembled kits at a cost-effective price and ensure you have the products you need on scene. With a full line of pharmaceuticals, supplies, and equipment, Boundtree can help you save lives and meet your budget. Visit www.boundtree.com today to see how Boundtree can lend a hand.
EMS Live in Wisconsin is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. To speak with the co-hosts or guests during the live show, dial 646-929-1081 and press number 1 on your keypad. Or send an email to emslive@paaw.us. And now, back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live. This is Joe Cavelli, joined by co-hosts Patrick Ryan and Dan Williams. I'm also pleased to bring in all of our guests at this time that we just introduced before the break. Good morning, everybody, and thank you very much for being a part of the program today.
Morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much for calling in. Let's go ahead and go around the room, so to speak, if we could, and just have you introduce yourself. Dan Teich, if you wouldn't mind starting us off.
Sure. Good morning. So I have, what I'll call the less meaty part. When our group went recently, 2 years ago now, down to Fort Worth, we came back from MedStar and kind of put our minds together. And I'm sure Captain Wright from Milwaukee or Captain Bandemir from West Dallas will be able to give a little bit more of how we got to where we're at. But we came back and divided up our groups, and we were given in the North Shore the community outreach end of things. So we've been doing a fall prevention and home assessment program, and I know one of the pieces that, Joe, you kind of wanted us to discuss was the funding piece. We actually applied for 2 local grants through the National Fire Protection Association and the American Heart Association, and we were fortunate to be funded for both. So our home assessment program focuses on 8 fire safety messages, but then also 8 fall prevention messages. We go in, assessments take about an hour to an hour and a half, and then any type of information that our assessor, which is not me, comes back with any type of health need, then I follow up with resources. We have a really close partnership with our health department. So for anybody out there, I would encourage you. Partnerships are huge. You know, the hospital systems, that's important, but local health departments have a lot of, we found a lot of resources that they're, you know, itching to help out with. So we have the home assessment piece, and then the other piece that we're doing here in the North Shore is we're responsible for a countywide CPR initiative to help improve cardiac arrest outcome. And in the next couple weeks here, we partnered with Channel 12, a local media outlet, to produce our own video that then can be taken into the home with a CPR bin, and you can train yourself in the comfort of your own home. And our hope is to drastically increase the number of people ready to respond in a cardiac arrest. So we kind of have, I guess, the obscure MIH piece, if you're looking at it. But we also did do a high utilizer, a small, very small high utilizer pilot where I followed 15 of our highest utilizers here in the North Shore. In the 30 days before I enrolled them into our program, they accounted for 52 of our calls. And in the 30 days post, they only called us 8 times for service, unscheduled service. So we had an 84% reduction during that 30-day enrollment. So that's kind of our piece. I know, like I said, some of the other Milwaukee County departments have a little bit more of the meat when it comes down to MIH.
Okay, very good, Dan. Thank you for the nice introduction, too, to what's happening at North Shore Fire. Dan Weber, how about Greenfield Fire? What have you realized thus far with your program?
Oh, yeah, Dan Weber, Greenfield Fire, Battalion Chief here in charge of Mobile Integrated Health. Our focus in Milwaukee County is on hospice, and the goal was to reduce the 911 transports of hospice patients to acute care facilities. We partnered with a local hospice agency here in southeastern Wisconsin, and also not only reducing 911 usage or the 911 transports, but also to reduce revocation of their hospice status. So we've realized that right to this point that it's been kind of a struggle as far as getting patient information, exchanging patient information, and updating hospice patient information. With hospice patients pretty much on hospice, I think the average time is 13 to 14 days. We need to have an electronic sharing of records, so to speak, so that we can update our CAD. So we've been entering these hospice patients into our CAD system, so when our paramedics respond 911 to hospice addresses, patients' addresses, they'll know that the patient is on hospice, what their diagnosis is, and they'll be able to contact the 24/7 hospice nurse for assistance, and in hopes that we will not be transporting as many hospice patients. The second part of the hospice partnership is also to, once a hospice patient is enrolled in hospice, we can also get a referral from that agency to check on them a few times, and just to basically reduce their revocation possibility of revocation. So right now, there is some reimbursement. As far as being funded, there's reimbursements for transports of hospice patients. If the call does come in 911, we do have the ability, instead of taking them to the hospital, we can take them to an in-care or inpatient hospice facility and be reimbursed by the hospice agency. And also a reimbursement funding for going out and doing the at-risk revocation assessments. So right now, the biggest hurdle is electronic information sharing. So we're working on that and hoping to roll out a pilot for the assessment portion beginning of the year.
And that's all a part of the care plan. I know when we had the tour up to Minneapolis and we heard from the folks at North Memorial Medical Center, a lot of it surrounded the care plan initiative, which documentation is a huge, huge part of it. And appreciate you bringing that up very much. Dave Bandemir and Tim Kirsten are with West Dallas Fire, and I know your group has received quite a bit of media attention. We've been following it for probably a year now, close to a year. David. So do you mind sharing what's happening at West Dallas Fire and the great things that you also are doing over there? Do we have Dave Bandemir on with us, Patty Pago? Okay, let's go to Michael Wright. Michael is with the Milwaukee Fire Department. And Michael, I know you too have received quite a bit of media attention recently, rolling out something with diabetic patients, but I know you've been intimately involved in this for quite some time now and have developed some great initiatives. What's happening at Milwaukee Fire?
Well, as Dan Tyke alluded to, we all were born when we all met down at MedStar and, you know, formed a little partnership, and it continues. But, you know, we've been working with high utilizers, and that kind of encompasses whatever disease-related group that the patients have. And, we've had a lot of good lessons learned, and I plan on, at the end of the pilot program, providing a document to Paul, if they would like it, to say, hey, this is what I learned. And I honestly believe that most of it will be applicable to wherever you go because, you know, the common denominator is access to care and patients following through. So, it's been quite the education and, you know, a lot of hard work and a lot of cooperation between the municipalities and Paul and the PFFW as well as Milwaukee County EMS. So the work isn't done yet. And I don't want to jump the gun yet. Once we're done, I'll be happy to share everything with everyone.
Okay, Michael, thank you very much. And I do have our friends at Aurora Healthcare and West Dallas Fire back on with us. David, would you go ahead and provide an update, too, as to West Dallas Fire Department, great things that you are also doing there and what you've realized?
Yeah, absolutely. Can you hear me on,
yes.
on the air right now?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So, my role, and I'm a captain with the West Dallas Fire Department, is more in the program development area right now. So I'm going to hand off some of the operation stuff, but I just want to say that we are a product of all of the great things that Milwaukee Fire with Chief Rolfing and with UWM with Dr. Litwack. And we know that we can't do this alone. And what we've really learned is that this is a collaboration, and the integrated isn't just something in our name. This is really how it works. And we're so excited from the high utilizer program, the direction from DHS, and getting to the point of having a partnership with a hospital. It's just been great. And I just want to make sure that everybody gets their due credit with this and that we are so excited to move forward. We're in the beginning stages, and some people feel that we're not moving fast enough, but it feels like we're moving very fast here. And I'm going to hand it off to Lieutenant Kirsten to go through some of the operational things with our readmission program with the hospital.
Hey, how are you doing? What we're working with is we're working with Aurora, and we're working with a program that deals with people with geriatrics, people over 65, COPD, MI, heart failures, pneumonia, and then added on to that is some discretion to the transitional nurse of what she thinks may need a little additional help with this. What we've realized so far is with the individuals we've seen, we've had an 86% success rate within the 30-day window that we've used. We talked about the partnership, and it's kind of the reoccurring theme is this really does have to work with the partners. And what the advantage of working with Aurora especially is we talk about the education and the documentation. Working with Patty has been great. She's really been kind of helping us through this process, really kind of showing us how to document what people need on this, kind of educating us through the process. And really what that's doing for us is improving the program rapidly, and it's going to continue our growth. And it's been a great experience so far. We found out on our visits, each visit we have found some kind of issue that needed to be addressed and hasn't been addressed, and it's improved the community's health.
As you alluded to, Tim, the process is very important, and let's bring Patty into the conversation if we could, because a lot of things that I've heard about community paramedicine, it is really cemented in that relationship. with the local healthcare provider. Patty, what have you realized from a healthcare system standpoint with community paramedicine and mobile integrated healthcare? And how have you approached it?
I've realized that it's a great partnership and collaboration, and it's benefited our patients immensely on the patients that the community paramedics and I as a transition nurse at West Allis Hospital have in common. So we're looking, as Tim mentioned, our geriatric patients, mainly patients with heart failure and COPD who don't have any other services in the home. And it's been great having eyes on the patient. So I can send the community paramedic and I can tell them, this is what we are concerned about from the hospital discharge perspective. This is what we really think maybe you could focus on, plus all the things that the community paramedic is expert in, which is the home safety eval and just establishing relationships with people in the community. So it's been, it's really been great. I know who to call when I need help. It's sharing knowledge. It's establishing trust and putting the processes in place. One of the things that we're working on is trying to get the community paramedic to be able to have read-write access in our Epic system. So what's been great about our project is Tim and Captain Vandenbeer and I sat down and we looked at the components and built a framework around what we thought should be done in the home, what kind of assessments need to be done and looked at, and medication checks and things like that. And we realized as our first couple patients went through that we can do the checkoff lists and everything really good, but each of our patients are very unique and they identify things that maybe we wouldn't have even identified that the patient needs help with. And how could we get that information into the medical record and quickly translate it to the primary care physician, which is another important piece of this project that we want to look at moving forward. Right now, it's a paper process, it's an encrypted email process, and there's a delay in getting pertinent information to our PCPs who want to make the decisions if there's medication changes that need to be done or plans of care or do not resuscitate orders that discussions need to be have. So those are the types of things that we're looking at. And moving forward, I see our program really supporting the primary care clinic physicians who are on board in doing this and also our emergency department because of our frequent visitors to the ED. There's quite a few that probably don't need to come into the ED if they had other community supports in place and we really handheld them for a while to help them realize the ability that they have and not using 911 to call because they're anxious at night because it got dark. That was our latest concern with the patient. So overall, we've got some big hurdles to get this read-write access into Epic, but our leadership is on board, our Epic team is on board, and because this is so innovative and new, there's a lot of compliance things we have to go through, and so when we talk about slow processes, this will be a slow process, but we've already got them. We will have them have read access within a couple weeks, so I can send them a patient, give them a login, and they'll be able to go in our medical record and see this particular patient. So I won't have to have the process of trying to send the team all the information they need before they go into the house.
Very good. Thank you, Patty. You're listening to Wisconsin EMS Live. We are discussing community paramedicine. If you have a question for any of our guests, the call-in number, if you're listening on the Internet, is 646-929-1081. If you are listening via telephone right now, you can just press number 1 on your keypad. We'd be happy to bring you into the conversation. Patrick Ryan is monitoring our email. If you do have an email question you'd like to send in, it is emslive@paw.us. Patrick, I know you've been quite successful so far, of course, over in Madison with implementation of community paramedicine, doing some trial things. What have you realized so far at this point in time?
Well, I actually am very encouraged by what I just heard. I mean, we've made some progress, but more so on our own. We've had talks with other various potential partners, but there's just some hurdles that we're at this stage having trouble kind of getting over. And so maybe a couple of questions for Patty, if I could. How from the hospital's the hospital's perspective, how do you navigate the medical oversight? That's one question that we've gotten a lot. So between the primary care physician who I guess from the models that I've seen, you know, delegates many things to, say, a nurse practitioner, and then they're going to further delegate to the community paramedic. So with that medical oversight, how can you speak a little bit to how you navigate that and, you know, make that a good, seamless transition in terms of oversight?
Sure, that's a great question, and we've worked on that really hard because the PCP is the driver of care when we look at the community approach to taking care of our patients. So in our system here at Aurora, we do a lot in EPIC, our medical record, with staff messaging. So let me back up a bit. Before we started the community paramedic program, we reached out to our primary care physician leaders in our market in the West Dallas area to talk about the opportunities that we might have with community paramedicine. The paramedics went with me to physician staff meeting over at one of our clinic sites and explained the program and got them to see the paramedics in person and talk about, this is what we plan to do. Are you on board with this? Do you think this would help your patients? So that was the first key thing, is getting some face time with a group of, there was seven primary care doctors in this group and leaders for our system. So the FaceTime was really important to get them to get buy-in. And so then we as a team had to build the process on how we were going to make that smooth. And what we do is when I get a patient that I feel is an appropriate referral, I staff message the doc and the nurse at the clinic and say, I'm sending the community paramedic in for these reasons that we saw when the patient was discharged. Do you have anything more to add? And if not, they'll just say, yay, thank you, keep me in the loop. Or they'll say, oh, the nurse will say, yeah, she's been calling here three times a day not knowing when her appointment is. And then I can share that with the community paramedic. When the assessment is done for medical oversight, so there's a couple things, and we haven't actually utilized this yet, but we're working on it. So if the community paramedic goes in and the patient's weight is up 3 pounds and they're a heart failure patient, we have the ability to call this clinic, the community paramedic does, and talk directly with the physician. And the physician hopefully would say, you know, how are their lungs, and do that talk with the paramedic, but then probably say, you know what, have the patient take 20 more milligrams of Lasix. And that'll come directly as an extension from the primary care doc as an order to the community paramedic, who will not give the medicine per se right now, but have the patient take the Lasix that's in the house. And then when the assessment is totally done, the community paramedic sends me an update, a paragraph form, and then I staff message that to the physician, and I also put that in the patient's medical record. I say, community paramedic visits, these are the interventions, these are our recommendations, and then the physician follows up with me, or they have the ability to follow up right with the community paramedic. So that was kind of long-winded. Does that help?
Oh, yeah, that was right on point to what my questions were. So it sounds like, you know, the primary first thing that has to happen is really to have that buy-in from the PCP and make sure that they're going to, you know, want to be on board and active with that. Because I think that's one of the things we've struggled with too, is, okay, let's say our community paramedic gets to a home, who are they going to call? Are they going to be able to get the primary care physician, or are they going to call somebody else? And who really provides that, you know, say, frontline, time-sensitive interaction? And it sounds like it's your primary care physicians.
Yeah, that's true. And in my role, I'm an advanced practice nurse too, so I can oversee the paramedics and what they're doing. But the goal is to remove me and have direct conversation with the primary care doc.
That's super. Thanks a lot for that insight.
Dan, did you have some questions for our guests?
No, I think everybody's covering the topic very well, and it's just nice to sit back and listen to a lot of educated people talk.
It's quite impressive what you've all developed in Milwaukee County, I must say. And, you know, I'm sure there's those listening or will listen to the downloaded version of this webcast and say to themselves, how do I get started? How do I begin to have these conversations? I guess if we could speak a little bit to that, what is your recommendation for those listening to this program who are thinking about 2016? They've heard community paramedicine. They hear about MIH. They see the benefits that could potentially be delivered in their local community with their ambulance service and hospital and other healthcare providers. What's your recommendation to starting the conversation, and how should they approach it? And I'll just leave that open to whoever wants to jump in first.
Yeah, this is Captain Wright. You know, I guess the first thing is to outline or define your particular community's need. and that will drive everything else. You know, once you figure out exactly, and there is no one exactly, you know, for us there's multiple exactlys of what we need, but at least so you can narrow it down, and then you can start approach the problem from there. I can't speak enough about the education, because truthfully, I know the other members on the phone, we can speak to the fact that we didn't know what we didn't know, and managed care or understanding chronic conditions at a different level isn't our forte as EMS providers, and that made a big difference. So I would start off with identifying what your particular community's need is and then starting from there.
Thank you very much, Captain Wright. Anybody else?
It's Captain Vandermeer with Health Fire. I'm going to echo a lot of the same things that Captain Wright's saying, but I just think it's so important in your community to build those relationships. As we move from a traditional EMS service that does a lot of things to people or does things and gets paid for them when they transport somebody, to looking at outcomes, we built relationships. We identified our patients that we knew, that we transported all the time, and out of those relationships is where we grew into the hospital, into the payers, into the case managers, and into the additional resources that we weren't even aware of as EMS providers in our community. Those are just so important for you. If you identify what your need is, go out and start looking at it, a fall prevention program. There are very small things that you can do to get started with this. So a lot of people ask how we got to this point. We knew the emergency room here, but we grew out of our patient relationships and actually spending time with them and talking to them and listening. So that's my two cents.
Very good point. Thank you, David. Anybody else?
This is Dan Dyke from North Shore Fire again. I would just echo what both of them said with, and then I guess to expound on it even more, the partnership piece and be willing to go at it from, and I think we heard it in MedStar in Texas, and then we heard it again in Minnesota. And Minnesota's model is obviously a little different because it was hospital-based, but be willing to look at it as an added value piece first. Don't look at it simply for finding that income. It's kind of the if you build it, they will come attitude of, you know, build those partnerships and add value to the customers you're serving, and the money will follow.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Dan. Let's talk about staff training, because I know that's a large component with this. You obviously need to get buy-in from your staff. You need to orchestrate this in a manner that's efficient, makes sense. There's the communications piece that Patty Pagel was alluding to before with charting and primary care and those kinds of things, working with the physician community. What are your recommendations around staff training and how to approach this? Because this potentially is a different mindset for some people.
Hey, Captain Banner from West Health Fire. And I think this is a huge piece for Milwaukee Fire, because bringing in the curriculum and modifying it to what we needed here and bringing in the experts from the community is just so important for us. When we looked at our training, we're traditionally looking at the high critical, the high-risk patient. But for this program, we're looking at the lower level. We're looking at identifying things and needs that we may have been a stable patient for us in the past. This is a huge customer service program. We looked at motivational interviewing. All of our paramedics in West Dallas went to the crisis intervention team training, de-escalation, a high behavioral health component to a lot of our patients. We looked at palliative care. We looked at every training that we could get our hands on for this. So it's growing into a new role, remaining within our scope. And to say that we're different from Minnesota, we have primary care here. We're navigating patients to do what that primary care and those resources need their patients to do to improve their outcomes.
And this is Patty. I think from my perspective, from the healthcare perspective, the training at UWM that the paramedics went through was great. Their clinicals got them good experience. But I think it's really important, if you're looking at doing something similar, is that you remember to allow time to build the relationship between the frontline caregivers that will be working together. So as a nurse, I've been a nurse for 26 years, I have learned so much about paramedics, the EMS system. And you would think, oh, she's a nurse, worked in a hospital forever. I would know those things. But you really don't until you start working with them. And without having the time together, you don't get to build that trust either. So I think that that's important to include in the training. The other thing that I think that was really successful with us is when we had our first couple patient referrals, a transition nurse and a community paramedic went and did the referral together so that we could see from both our perspectives what might be a good framework to build on as we keep going with more referrals. So I think that that was helpful. The other thing is we've grown as a community and collaborated together and working as a team. We're sharing educational opportunities back and forth. So we have a difficult case call that we do that the paramedics can call in and participate. And they're actually presenting a case for one of our calls next month or the next month. So sharing education back and forth has been extremely valuable. And as we move forward, I only see that growing more.
Very good. Thank you, Patty. Any other comments? If not, I'd like to move into funding. And I know funding was referenced. You need to start somewhere. You need to get these things implemented. Start with the community first, and things will fall into play. There are those out there that do need to operate within the means that they have available to them. And it might be reporting to a committee, a council, or a board of directors, or city government, or town government, somebody that has overall financial oversight with the ambulance operation. What would be your recommendation as they look at the funding component, since you need to pay for staff time, clinical time, necessary equipment, might be special vehicles that are unmarked, that would be non-traditional for a fire EMS agency, that type of thing. What would be some recommendations around funding or the financial component?
Yeah, this is Captain Wright. I think that it's a part of everything we just spoke of. So the first thing is identifying the need. And then because for us, we had to convince the people that hold the purse strings as of why is this important, because they know nothing of it. It hasn't been in existence before. So we have to prove to them and educate them along the way that this is what we're doing. So identifying the need, and then basically we had to start off from scratch to prove it. And educate people as we went along the way. And then to join in with Patty and Dave is that then the partnerships come in and prove your worth to your partners. And the ultimate goal is once they see your value and they can see that you actually do offer something that isn't currently being offered and you're staying within your scope, and that's when the conversations of funding coming from unlike partners comes into play. And it kind of sucks in the beginning because, you know, you're spending your own money and we all are under budgetary constraints. But we found that, you know, the most expensive part to start obviously was education. And I think we can all echo that the education was very valuable. You know, one of the things for education for me is going to a wound care clinic and seeing some of the diabetic wounds and things of that nature. If I'd seen some of those wounds in the field, I would have freaked out, like, oh, my God, this guy's losing his leg. Well, now I understand it. That's just the way it is. So the education is an expense that, you know, you're probably going to have to incur. But proving your worth, knowing what your community needs, and then partnering, and hopefully then the funding will come.
Thank you, Captain Wright. Anyone else?
Hey, it's Dave Vandermeer. You know, listening to Captain Wright, it just reminds me, when we went to MedStar, we brought along a lot of our city leaders, and we report to, under the mayor, we have a police and fire commission. We had members from, we had an older person that went along on the trip. It's just education as far as what we do. Within the hospital, the emergency room doesn't know what the ICU knows. And then when you get outside the hospital, it's even more foreign. You know, you have to educate everybody in the team, and having these meetings and getting together and deciding what your community wants to do is really an education piece. I mean, we had a lot of obstacles, a lot of barriers to, and most of it was education. I mean, we work on with nurses, we would work with social workers in the emergency room, we will work with physicians, and it's getting out of your roles. And I don't want to steal something from Patty, but I will. that everybody needs to get off of their high horse. And if it's about the patient outcome, we are going to be doing some of the same things. We steer away from calling a med reconciliation because that's the pharmacy piece. We steer away from assessment because that's a nursing piece. And what we're all doing is trying to have the patient improve. Specific things as far as the funding piece, beyond the education, we wrote for a grant through the Assistance to Firefighters. We had our education covered here, and those opportunities are right now going on through January to get your grant in. The non-emergency vehicle is a part of the grant this year. We look to our local organizations here through the West Dallas Rotary. We got funding to go explore this. And through the county, we have received a ton of support from the electronic medical record on down to the medical oversight, education, and the continuing ed. I think that, you know, we're deploying completely differently here. We have a designated position for this. We have an operational Monday through Friday community paramedic, and that's a complete change. That's a big change for our department, and we had to work on it internally, externally, and every which way. But the value-based, outcomes-based model is where we're headed, and these are good things to try for every department. And we would assist, help any department that is looking at this. So feel free to reach out to contact us. We learn from everyone. We'd like to help anyone because that's how we're going to build this at the state level.
Very good, Dave. Thank you for offering that. I was going to mention that, too, at the end here. If you all were open to contact from those who would like to discuss this more, possibly come visit you or even do a ride-along, if that would be acceptable to all of you.
Yep, absolutely. Yes.
Dennis Capmeyer, okay, we're open to it just a little bit after the first of the year, please.
Okay, very good. Thank you for mentioning that. We appreciate your support, and it's nice to give back to the industry that has given back to you to start this off. And I know you mentioned MedStar down in Texas quite a bit. There's other entities throughout the United States that do offer access to the types of programs that they're doing and invite people to come in to see what they are doing. We're getting close to wrapping this up here just in the next few minutes. Is there anything possibly that we didn't cover or that you for sure would like to make sure we talk about?
I just had one point, it's Captain Wright again. You know, everyone speaks nationally about behavioral health, and I'll tell you what, I'm finding 65 to 75% of the people that we encounter have some form of behavioral health concerns. And it's, you know, I mean, we all know it, and it's hard to address because it's expensive, timely, and takes commitment, but that's going to be a large component of it. So linking up, if you have a local area behavioral health division or something like that, in advance, because that's going to be a part of your process regardless of where you are. And that's just my personal opinion, but it's actually surprising how many people have issues that are not identified.
Very good. Thank you for mentioning that, Captain Wright. Anything else before we wrap up today's program regarding community paramedicine? Our webcast will continue, but I just wanted to offer that to anyone on the call here.
Joe, this is Patrick. Just Patty, if I could ask, I think it would be very helpful if the Hospital Association heard how much you support this concept and support the high-level educational training. I think they've gotten some different messages from some of their other members, but I think as far as the legislation goes, that would be a very pivotal piece if we could get some communication between Aurora and the Hospital Association to really kind of explain. We've had some meetings with them, but I think others maybe across the state don't buy into the gold standard, which is the educational program that UWM has done and Hennepin has done as well. So if that could be possible on your end, I think that would be helpful.
Absolutely.
Well, we appreciate your support very much, Patty, and to all of you on the broadcast or webcast, I should say, we appreciate you being a part of this. I'd like to extend my appreciation and thanks to Dan Tyke at North Shore Fire, Dan Weber at Greenfield Fire, Dave Bandemir and Tim Kirsten with West Allis Fire, Michael Wright with Milwaukee Fire Department, Patty Pagel with Aurora Health System. Congratulations to all of you on what efforts you're putting forward and developing community paramedicine and mobile integrated healthcare in your local communities, and for the difference that you're making, and for sharing your information this morning so that others can benefit from that. And this is an ongoing process. We understand that it's not a one-stop shop kind of thing. It's an ongoing process, and this will continue to evolve. Thank you for your leadership. There needs to be those that look at the front, have the vision, have the interest, have the motivation, and want to make a difference. And it takes people like yourselves to pull it together. So thank you on behalf of this association and the providers throughout the state.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Joe. Talk to you later.
Okay, very nice to have you with us. Our webcast continues. It's 15 minutes before the hour. We've been chatting about community paramedicine for 45 minutes. After our next commercial break, we're going to be bringing in Fred Hornby. Fred's going to give us an update on the Working Together Conference. You're listening to EMS Live in Wisconsin. Having trouble collecting on past due accounts or your aging report continues to increase? Contact Transworld Systems and ask about their easy flat fee collection service that averages just $10 per past due account. With better than average industry collection results, Transworld presents an option versus writing off that $500 or $2,000 patient bill. For more information, go to PAW's homepage and click on Transworld's banner ad. Collections just got easier with Transworld Systems. This program is sponsored by Jefferson Fire and Safety, providing high-quality equipment and service to fire, EMS, and police agencies from across Wisconsin, and manufacturer's representative for Lifeline Ambulances. Find them on the web at jeffersonfire.com. EMS Medical Billing Associates provides complete fire and EMS billing for service calls, alarms, and data management. EMS Medical Billing Associates, experienced, professional, accurate. Find them on the web at emsmedicalbilling.com. Welcome back to Wisconsin EMS Live. This is Joe Cavelli, joined by Patrick Ryan and Dan Williams. I'm also pleased to bring into the webcast Fred Hornby with the Working Together Conference. Fred, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Joe.
This takes me back to the days, Fred, when you were at the state EMS office and we would do the webcast EMS to the point. I am just absolutely thrilled that you are with us today. So thank you for calling in.
I want to thank Paul for the yes, that's for sure.
So you were going to say, though, go ahead.
Oh, I just want to thank Paul for the opportunity for us to come in and talk a little bit about our conference. As you know, it's the 30th annual conference that's coming up last week in January.
Well, it's a big one, Fred, and I know you get about 2,500 or more people coming to the event. You recently joined the Wisconsin EMS Association, so congratulations. This is your debut conference, your maiden voyage, so to speak, and I know there's a lot of details that go into it, thousands of details that go into it. And we, of course, wish you best wishes with preparation here. What are some of the conference highlights that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Sure. Well, again, thank you very much. We're going to start on Tuesday, which is January 26th. We're going to have a mobile integrated healthcare symposium. And this actually connects on with other symposiums that have been done. But this is a little bit different. And this one we're going to be highlighting Wisconsin stakeholders. So it's put on by Wisconsin stakeholders for Wisconsin stakeholders. We're going to discuss items like how to develop an MIH program. And, the talk today was community paramedic, and that's wonderful. I learned a lot from the professionals you had on. But we also want to take that one step further and talk about community EMS, because in many areas in Wisconsin, it's not just paramedics. It's EMTs, it's advanced EMTs, intermediates. And we want to include them in the discussions as well. So we're going to talk about program development, the first steps, who's going to be at the table, community outreach, how to identify gaps in your community. And listening to the folks' earlier talk, that's really what this all is about, is identifying those gaps in your community and how to eliminate some of those gaps. We're also going to talk about the role of the medical director. The medical director has a huge influence on community EMS programs. Talk a little bit about training, sustainability, data, and that type of thing. So that'll be on Tuesday starting at 8 o'clock, and all of our special events are either going to be at the Hilton or the Wisconsin Center downtown?
The dates of the conference, Fred?
The dates are January 26th through 31st. This year, as it is our 30th, we added on a day before and a day after. On that Tuesday, we're doing the, like I said, the Mobile Integrated Healthcare Symposium. And this time, for the first time ever on a Sunday, we're doing a bonus session. There's no charge for this session. We're bringing in an individual to talk about the living legacy. You know, what can we take back to our departments, and what are they really going to remember us from? So we're really excited about that as well.
Very good. How do people find out more information about the event if they didn't get a brochure in the mail or would like to refer back to the details? What's the website address?
It's www.wisconsinems.com.
Perfect. And they can get all the information there. And you all have done a terrific job over the years. And Fred, I know you look forward to carrying on that legacy. This is a major, major event. What are some highlights that you have if we look maybe at the exhibit area? Because I know you get several exhibitors, large equipment, small equipment, new technologies. It's kind of a springboard for some companies with new technologies. What are some things that are planned in the exhibit hall? Or who are some of the attendees that you'd like to spotlight?
Well, in the exposition hall, we have all of our current vendors, our sponsors. We have Zoll Medical. We have EMP. Basically, it's a one-stop shop. So if you want to look for ambulances, you can find ambulance manufacturers there. If you want to get supplies, anything high-tech, we have quite a few TEMS. Individuals that have TEMS equipment and supplies and that type of thing. We are hoping to expand our expo area this year to include another portion of the exhibit hall. We've always had the two portions, and two portions went unfilled. But this time we're actually hoping to fill up a third one. And it's very exciting. We have the Department of Transportation. They're coming in with their motorcycle safety. We have the blood center that's coming in. So we're very excited.
Very good. Brett, is there anything else you'd like to share?
Yeah, we do have. I did want to talk a little bit about our keynotes. On Friday,
go ahead.
Will be Anthony Avillo. He's going to be talking about the new norm, and I think this really comes into play with all the tragedies we've heard about in California as well as Paris. We as EMS providers, it's not the same as it used to be when I got into EMS, you know, 30 years ago. It's a different can of worms, and I think that Anthony will do a great job explaining how things are a little bit different. And then Saturday we have Leroy Butler, the inventor of the Lambeau Leap. He's coming in and talking about overcoming adversities. If you don't know much about Leroy Butler, he did come from a rather poor area of the country. He overcame a lot of adversities via physical health. So he's going to come in and talk to us about how you overcome those adversities. So we're real excited about that as well.
Very good. Fred, thank you very much for offering a highlight and a snapshot of the Working Together Conference. Again, it is in Milwaukee, January 26 to 31. More information at wisconsinems.com. Did I get that right? For the website?
That's perfect.
Wisconsinems.com
is
the website. Okay. Fred, I know you've got a lot of things going on, so I want to thank you very much for taking some time to call in today. Best wishes as your plans continue to unfold here and with launching the conference next month.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
Thank you. You're very welcome. Dan, Patrick, we've had an interesting show today. We've covered a lot of ground regarding community paramedicine. It's obviously an emerging trend. What are some of your thoughts?
Well, this is Dan. Again, a very good show. Every month we do this, I think, well, we had a good show. I can't imagine we could do any better, but it seems like every month we do. It just proves, I think, that there's just so much going on in EMS that we need to talk about. And I was really ecstatic to hear how the cooperation is now taking over, especially with the community paramedic and the mobile integrated health programs. It's just really nice to see. There was a time when that wasn't always the case.
Yeah, I'd echo what Dan said, and I think that this is really just the tip of the iceberg, that this pioneering work that they're doing is really going to be able to be adapted and modified and done throughout the state. The stakeholders will continue to work on this legislation, but it's going to be really, really pivotal that we can get their message out more to the good work they're doing and the benefits that there are for everyone, for the EMS services, for the health systems, and ultimately, and most importantly, the patients.
Yeah, all we need now is the state to get on board.
Right, and I think what's going to happen, too, maybe to that point, Dan, is as we talked about the initiatives in Milwaukee County and the data that they are collecting and the way the media has been covering this very favorably with patient contacts and outcomes, reduction of high 911 utilizers and so on, is the data elements and the comments and the testimonials that are coming from this. And with Patrick, like you asked Patty to speak more closely with Wisconsin Hospital Association. Those are the kinds of stories that need to get out there as far as how this is happening. And obviously the state has a responsibility with licensure and public trust and certifications and things like that. But I think as more and more of this information, more and more of the information is shared and we have some data points to refer to, it just helps further the message along. Anything else?
Nothing on my end.
Okay. All right. Well, let's chat about our next program and a little bit of a change in our format, too. Our next live show is Tuesday, January 12th, starting at 9 a.m. That webcast begins with a new format for us as EMS Live in Wisconsin will actually be done twice per month on the second and fourth Tuesdays from 9 to about 9:30 or 9:40. So that is a little bit of a change in that this program has been once a month, but what we are finding is that we're getting a lot of followings with our webcast, a lot of downloads after the webcast is done live. And as Dan mentioned just a few minutes ago, there's a lot of things that we can talk about that are happening in Wisconsin EMS around the state. So as this program is a forum for that discussion, we felt as the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin that it's important for us to continue to communicate and bring some of these newer emerging topics to your attention and to speak with people that have information or answers. So our program will be advancing. So again, beginning with the new year, we'll be going live the second and fourth Tuesday of the month starting at 9 o'clock. And depending on the content, we'll run about a half hour or 40 minutes. So that should give us plenty of time to cover the information. Our guest for Tuesday, January 12th, is attorney Wendy Ahrens with Godfrey and Kahn in Madison. Now, we had Wendy on the program just a few months ago. She was very helpful, very informative regarding Medicare. Well, Wendy is going to be talking with us about this. What is an ambulance services compliance plan? What is an ambulance services compliance plan? And we will be able to answer that question when we have her join the program on January 12th, starting at 9 a.m. This program, of course, is recorded. You can download or share it from the PAW website at paaw.us. I'd like to thank you very much for listening. This is Joe Cavelli on behalf of the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. And we wish you all a very pleasant day and a terrific holiday, and we'll chat with you again in 2016.
EMS Live is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, which is dedicated to healthy, sustainable ambulance and emergency medical services delivery in Wisconsin. Program comments can be emailed to emslive@paaw.us. That's emslive@paaw.us. Thank you for listening.